My sister and me and Nolan, we were in the ISKE booth at this industry trade conference deal. And Nolan had my sister put on the flyer that Ed Iskandarian's 75th anniversary tribute car is gonna be at SEMA 2023. Here you go, media, run with this story. And Dad's like, I hate you, Nolan.
Nolan sees that we built a 55 Chevy to go 6 seconds in 4 months. So we gotta be able to build Ed's car in a couple of days, right?
Me on the internal, I'm like, I'm panicking because I'm like, oh my gosh, like there's a lot that's gotta happen.
Welcome to What Moves You, a Speedway Motors podcast where we tell the stories behind the cars and the people who build and drive them. I'm Joe McCullough, and today we're joined by Dennis and Alex Taylor, and they're gonna talk about their new project, which is a tribute to the legendary ISKE Roadster. Their tribute car will be a T Roadster with some modern touches to celebrate the 75th anniversary of ISKE Cans. We'll also discuss what it was like to grow up in the automotive industry, drag week, and then turning drag racing into a media company.
I'm Dennis Taylor. I build hot rods in Boonville, Arkansas, have pretty much my whole life. Wouldn't know what to do if I wasn't building hot rods.
And I'm Alex Taylor. I'm his daughter, drag racer, builder, co-host of Motor Trend's Hot Rod Garage. So on camera, off camera, all the things cars. So
car people.
Yeah.
And how did that get started? Take us back to the very beginning. How did the car thing happen?
There's some cars right behind you over here that I can go all the way back to the late 60s when I was just a pup, you know, preteen, that my brothers were both car people when I was growing up. So I remember things like the Little Coffin and most of all the Boot Hill Express, but I've always been around cars, hot rods. My father was not a car guy at all, but I had the influence of Southern California. I grew up in Orange County, just miles, a few miles away from Orange County International Raceway. So I could ride my bike there. Everybody in the late 60s through the 70s in Orange County was a car guy. So I grew up around it.
Do you remember seeing your first drag race?
Yeah, Orange County.
What year?
75, probably, for me.
Do you remember, were there any big names?
Oh,
there?
Yeah, all the big names. At that time, it was 64 funny cars at Orange County. Everybody who was anybody was at Orange County. And a whole lot of those everybody's who was anybody's was in, they were based out of that area. You know, L.A. to San Diego was just car rich with people. I mean, it was the place to be. I always call it the center of the universe for drag racing.
Right.
At that time.
Right. And then at what point did that become, like, did you go from the kid climbing the fence to, like, that actually being your career?
16 years old, August 16th, 1977, I bought my first car, which I bought off a dealership in California. It was, I think I got that date right. It was the same day Elvis Presley died.
Yeah, I was going to say, whatever day Elvis died.
So I got to get that right. You know, I'm driving home in my 72 Nova. I was shopping for a 70 Nova. I found a bitchin' 72 Nova on a lot. I paid $900. My dad matched that with $900. I drove home in my, it wasn't a super sport, but it was a 350 small block car. And that's when it started. Within a month, it was candy apple green and silver with big wheels and Mickey Thompson tires on it.
And you still have it, right?
I still have it.
And then you just build off of that and actually started building your career as a car builder.
Yeah, I suppose that's the way it was. I mean, everybody that I was friends with had Chevelles, Camaros, Novas, whatever. So, you know, as teenagers and early 20s, that's all we did. When I graduated high school, we moved to Arkansas. And I was more than ready. As much as I loved Orange County, it was kind of difficult to be a long-haired punk rock hot rod guy with candy apple green car and tunnel ram with, you know, 2 4-barrels sticking out of the hood. It was kind of, we were a target at that time. So I was ready to get out of California and move to Arkansas when my father retired from his job. So a good friend of mine that I grew up, went to school with, he was a year older than me. He was felt the same way. So he moved to Arkansas and we bought a business. An older guy retiring had a hot rod or a car shop, repair shop. And we turned it into basically a hot rod shop. So from, you know, 20 years old, 21 years old till now, I've been self-employed building hot rods. And that's, our partnership lasted for a few years, and then we went our separate ways, and I just continued building cars and had my own shop ever since, pretty much.
So when does the family and Alex sort of enter the picture?
So, well, Debbie and I built, we got off into building fiberglass. So we built 41 Willys, 33 Ford three-window coupes, 37 lift-off top sedans. Debbie and I built lots of cars ourselves. And at one point I had, in 2007, I had a 33 Willys high boy coupe that I had built with an early Hemi, just a really cool car. And I had it for sale. And Denny Terzich, which is an East Coast builder, he had the America's Fastest Street Car, which was a 67 Camaro with a pro-charged big block 580 cubic inch engine in it. And he had just won in 2007. He'd won Fastest Street Car in America. It was the first car to go into sevens. Street car is a really big deal. He calls one day and he says, hey, you want to trade that for that Willys? I'm like, dude, what car are you talking about? He said, my Camaro. I'm thinking, you're never going to sell the black Camaro. What Camaro? He says, my black car. And I said, is it just like it was on drag week? He said, exactly like it was. I said, done deal. So I got that car, traded my Willys coupe for that, started drag racing. It was really outstanding. The car was, you know, a high 7, low 8 second car at the time, but that was really moving. I mean, it was very fast, 180 mile an hour car. For me, that was very fast. Well, she was how old? In
2010. 10.
So 10 years old. She became my crew chief, we called her. So she was schlepping fuel and plugs and ice for the intercooler and whatever needed to be done. She was there to do it.
But they did have their business, as you were saying, for what, 15, 20 fiberglass-wise, that was?
Yeah, we started fiberglass, I don't know, like 92 or something. Like that.
So I was born in 97. So Megan and I, which is my sister, grew up in the shop literally like from a couple weeks old. So we'd always been around it, you know, and he was nostalgia racing before that. But really what started like me liking drag racing so much was that car. But yeah, we followed around, like helped where we could, hands on. He's a good teacher. So I'd always like slow him down, ask questions. And then, so then once that came along, that's where I was like, okay, I love this. I fell in love with that car.
Do you have any memories of being in the shop, like maybe even before that as a little kid, and thinking like, man, this building stuff and building cars is cool, like I might want to do this?
So it's weird when people think of it like that, because like we didn't know anything different. So it took a long time to realize that that's not normal, like that's not, you know, what you normally do kind of thing. So I didn't actually know a life other than that. And I didn't realize, like I keep saying, like that wasn't what people did until I was much older. So I always enjoyed being hands-on. Like when they had their fiberglass business, he had employees at the time. I'd go down like after school and help roll fiberglass and, you know, anything I could do around there. I had a little woodworking corner set up in the shop, a little bandsaw, you know, always had something going on. And so I didn't really think of it as like, oh, okay, that's what I want to do. It was just, that's what I enjoyed doing. That's what I knew is that's what life was. So
I think if the question kind of sounds like if she just walked in here and says, man, I really like to collect cars someday. If you grew up collecting cars, you wouldn't really ever have that aw moment.
The light bulb moment doesn't exist.
Just,
because the light bulb's always been on.
Yeah.
And it's one of those that it becomes that whole, well, you just ended up in it because your dad's in it, but it's not at the same time. Definitely, like, I didn't know another life other than that, so it wasn't that, aha, this is the moment that it happened. But it's one of those where it's, aha, I don't want to leave this, more so. You know, when I'm 16, 17, 18, thinking about going to college, and everybody else is on their way to college and, like, leaving everything, I'm like, well, I can't leave this. So that was more the aha of like, well, this is my life. I got to keep doing that. And so that's where that kind of probably happened more.
The realization of realizing that you kind of like it rather than just have
to
do it.
Yeah, but it was always, I always enjoyed it and I wanted to be there. And so it was one of those that it's very natural. I don't know how else to explain it.
So obviously, we're building towards the 2013 drag week, right? But how did you get from the black Camaro to the orange Camaro?
So they sold it. They raced it for probably 3 years.
Three or four.
Three or four. And that's actually where the name Bad Marrow came from. So we have a friend, Phil Smith, who used to work at Flowmaster. Flowmaster Phil Flowmaster Smith. Yeah. He always word twisted. And so Dad was on the phone with him one day, right at the end of it. Mm-hmm. And he said, "That's one Bad Marrow." So then you got the license plate. And then they sold the car. And it was like heartbreaking. It was
license plate hung on the wall all by itself. Mm-hmm. Car's gone. She's depressed. So.
So then Mom had a 68 Camaro that they bought from a friend in Ventura.
Right.
And she was driving it one day. We were dropping one of my friends off at her house. And the brakes, like she hit a bump. Brake line broke or something like that. I don't
She's
remember exactly what happened.
Turning the driveway and I didn't do the brakes.
Yeah, you didn't do the brakes.
Somebody else did. And it overextended the brake line and it popped it out. And little did we know, because we hadn't really had the car very long, that the rear master cylinder was dry and the front one just popped. So no brakes, boom, right
so
in
she,
the back one.
Yeah, so she runs into the back of this car, smashes the front of the car, you know, not super fast, but smashes this car. And so I think I screamed bloody murder. I was like, no, you know. They thought somebody died. And so the car was sitting in the back of the shop for probably 2 years.
Probably.
And so it sat back there. And then finally, like, it always been the deal that if I went to, you know, graduated school, got my college paid for, whatever, they would help me get a car, you know, my first nice car. So we reversed that role a little bit. And so we built that car when I was 15. So she gave me the car, we built it, and then it became my version of Bad Marrow. So I took the license plate, same wheels and everything, and that's where that kind of came from.
The baby Bad Marrow is what it was.
It didn't look anything like it, but to me, that was my connection back to the
car. And ultimately, the car almost ran as fast as the big block
car. It's pretty cool.
I think we're talking, I was looking at memories this morning. I think that car went 827, if I remember right.
I think it's 820, high 820s or low 830s.
And that's smallish tire.
Yeah, 275 radial. It was just a
everyday power steering.
LSX. Yeah.
Power window street car.
Nice car. So, and it still sits like that. So that's the thing. Like it's still that car. So we still have it.
Yep.
It's pretty cool.
Again, leading up to 2013, do you remember your first pass down the drag strip as a driver?
It didn't happen until 2013. Well, I rode along with Dad. I guess for one pass, and he had a 55 Chevy Gasser, but that was just 8th mile ride along. My first pass was we built the car, finished it, and that was in August of 2013. I turned 16 in July, and so we rented a local track for half a day and had to learn how to do a burnout, shake a brand new car down, make a pass, all the things, all in one day. So yeah,
get ready for the upcoming drag week, which was just going to be her and her mother. I was staying home.
Yep.
So the car wasn't an 8-second car, it was an 11-second car.
Well, at that point, it was probably high 12s, you know. By the end of that, it was, by the end of the first drag week, it was high 11s.
But 11-7s.
I mean, it was a slower, you know, it was a much slower car.
Still pretty fast.
It's still pretty fast. For, I mean, as a 16-year-old, I would not have been entrusted with an 11-second car.
Yeah.
Talk about that. Like, talk about how you got to, those guys are going to do, you guys are going to drag week by yourselves.
Well, that question that you just asked actually comes up a lot. And I guess it is kind of crazy. Like, they're like, okay, here you go. Here's, you know, take off with the car. That's not really how it happened, though. And that goes back to, like, being in the shop. We've always had, me and Meg both have always had a lot of respect for what's there. Because we grow up around, you know, high-dollar show car paint jobs and these builds and that. And feet don't go on running boards, you know, like, things like that. So it was that understanding that it's not just, you know, we built it together, so it's seeing that work, and I mean, it's definitely a very different than just here's keys to a fast car.
But the way that came about is we made the agreement that if she, I think the agreement was if you got straight A's all the way through high school, we'd buy her a new car for college, whatever, or for her first car. Well, then she got so interested in drag racing and what we were doing that I talked to Debbie one day. I said, and her car really wasn't that damaged. It was a front fender and a hood. You know, it just, we wouldn't drive it because it was ugly and it sat.
And she stripped the paint because they were going to paint it. And
yeah, so
it
was a really nice looking car. But so she was not that in love with the car. I mean, she liked it, but it wasn't a major thing in her life. I said, what if we make the deal with her instead of buying her a new car, if she'll help build that car, restore, the car was semi-restored to start with, but we strip it down and restore it, then she can have that for her first car. Let her drive it through school. Debbie said, that's a good idea. So we made her the offer. And then shortly after, I mean, like within a week or something, we said she was really into drag week because Denny's car had won drag week and she was keeping up with it. And I said, you know, if you do this right, if you want, you can do drag week in 13.
Yeah.
So, that lit her eyeballs up. You know, she was ready. So that's what exactly happened. She helped rebuild it. She stripped it. We built an LS and put in it. And, you know, the agreement was, so it was her and her mom. I said, this is great mother-daughter bonding time. It's a LS. You know, it's Holly. It's simple. It's not going to be a lot of work. Well, it was so fresh, it was a lot of work. But she managed to get through drag week. She tuned it herself. I told her, installed the Holly. I think I did it. She may have helped.
She wired it. I helped. I did the bass tune for it.
I said, here's the laptop. Here's what you got to do. And I didn't know anything about it. You tune it, get it running, and, you know, make the car work, and you guys go on drag week. And that's, she built a tune. We turned the key and it started, and she went to drag week and did really well.
Yeah. So that was cool because it was one of those that, at the time, like, Holly is very common now in those systems, but at the time, it wasn't. Holly didn't even have their classes that they host in-house or anything like that. So we actually did all that, you know, and this is actually a pretty short timeline because we'd started on the car early, but it got pushed aside for customer work, so we ended up doing kind of a crunch build on it. And so it all happened very fast, and then I had no idea what tuning was. You know, I hadn't been around a lot of fuel injection and stuff like that, and so it was totally, almost seems crazy that it actually all worked out like it did. You know, there wasn't all the YouTube and that to search and things. It was they had a quick start manual. I read it all, and we ended up going to the classes and stuff later together. But yeah, it was cool.
So I mean, we've all had that experience of like goal, you thrash, you meet your goal, and then that experience of like driving out of the driveway and driving down the street for the first, like, do you remember that moment with that car? Like,
I do. Yeah, so there's a couple different moments, but I do remember getting to start it and drive it, and or say the first startup in the shop. You know, I have that reaction on video, actually, which is, we weren't doing, this was never intentionally for the internet stuff at the time, you know, like, that wasn't it, so we have that. But I remember the first time I got to actually go drive it, I remember I went through a dip that was in the street, and I took the front spoiler
brand
off.
Brand new spoiler.
Brand new spoiler. I come back, and I was like, Dad.
It was a driveway.
It was a driveway. It
and
was
she
really,
went out.
And it took the front spoiler off, and I came back, and I was like, so.
It didn't take it off, to be
it
fair.
It cracked it. It cracked it. And I was like, so this is, I kind of messed it up. But that's the only thing I ever did to the car. Like, that's the only thing that ever happened to it. And that was just, it was brand new. So I remember that, but then I also remember there was a forum at the time called Bang Shift, and there was the unofficial official Drag Week forum. And I was, while we were doing the build, I was blogging about the car just because I wanted to have friends when I got there. And I remember when we pulled up to the hotel and the car was on the back of the trailer, somebody goes, "You're that girl." And I was like,
yeah, I was shocked. I mean, I was really shocked. Yeah. We pull in and we literally got surrounded by other drag weekers. And it's like, I didn't read the forum. I didn't know what she was doing. She'd say something once in a while, like, "Who's Eddie Miller?" I said, "I recognize the name from Drag Week." Yeah. And she'd say, "Well, he's commenting on my stuff. It seems like a nice guy." You know, stuff like that. And it's like, people are actually paying attention to what you're writing. Well, when we pulled in the motel that night, it's like, people all around the car. And that kind of started. It's like, I don't understand, but whatever, it's cool. And we went on. She did drag week. Meg and I stayed in the motel room, and they went and registered that morning. And it's like, we went back to Arkansas. We let them go on the thing by themselves. Yeah. But I guess that kind of surprised a lot of the guys or people at drag week. It's like, we'd trust her, but I totally trusted her. You know, she wasn't make believe. She's not standing there getting pictures. She's in there down and dirty. She had something to do with every aspect of the car, so I knew she knew what to do.
And I think that goes back kind of to the question you were asking earlier, but it wasn't just like we would be at the shop and I just sit over in the corner or something. Like, all growing up, literally from as long as I can remember, that's why there was never that aha moment, but like, I would follow him around the shop and like slow him down, you know, half the time, because it's like, why is this? It was always the why and the how. I wanted to know the why and the how. and this and that. And so he was a good teacher. And so that's where it's like, it wasn't just like hand the keys over to somebody who knows nothing. It was, he knew that I had a background in it, you know, knew the knowledge. So.
And you almost didn't get to race, right? Like that, you're probably sick of telling that story, but I feel like it's a great story, right? Like you show up and what happened there?
Yeah. So they were in the hotel room. My mom and I we were the first people in the tech line because I was that new person that was like, we're going to be the first ones there, you know? And so I remember as clear as day, I just told the story the other day, actually. And I went all through this line. I rolled in the gates and I told mom, I was like, that's Freiberger. That's David Freiberger. And he knew that I was coming because he said, oh, I'm glad to see you did make it. And I was like, Freiberger knew I was coming, you know, it's cool. So then we go through the lines and I went through all the tech mess and everything, car passes tech, answer all the questions. I'm at the last level of this situation here. And the lady tells me, you can't race. And I was like, haha, funny, laugh, think it's a joke, you know, like Freiberger knew I was coming. Yes, I can. What are you talking about? She goes, you're not 18. And I was like, I am 16 and I have a driver's license. And so basically, long story short, they tried to say that the rules were because we paid with a credit card, because you have to because it's online payment, that agreed and meant that you were 18. And I was like, well, you can race NHRA. And so people, you know, you can race NHRA at 16, have to have
a valid
license.
So you have an NHRA license
and
at
so
16.
It made so no sense. Yeah. And it was so frustrating. And so I just was like, well, that's not the end of that. And so 16 me marched, and I was like, I'm going to find Freiberger.
She's on the phone with me. She wakes me up, and she says, they're not going to let me race. And I said, why? You have to be 18. And she goes, I'm going to find Freiberger, and hangs the phone up. And I'm like, oh, crap. And a few minutes later, she calls me back describing the way this all went down, and it's pretty funny, I guess.
Yeah, and so there's still people that talk about that were there for the first year where they remember seeing me like walk from the front of the line to the back of the line. And it was so funny because it spread like wildfire. Like before I got from the front of the tech line to the back of the tech line to try to find him, people at the back of the line knew what had happened because like people were excited about this and they were watching it. It was like kind of like a fresh energy at Drag Week. And so people at the back of the line, as I'm walking up, I didn't know they'd know this. They're like, if they don't let you race, we're sitting it out. And I'm like, wow, we just started a movement accidentally, you know? So I end up finding Freiberger. I tell him the situation. He goes, I'll be back. And he goes in the motor home and he comes back and he's like, all right, we talked to insurance. It's clear. And so it ended up being a whole situation the next year. They called me back. It's funny, Keith Turk, you guys probably have heard his name with Land Speed. He calls back and tells Dad, I don't want to be the guy, but.
Yeah, it was a mess to say the least. And it went on from 13 to 14, but we created some hard feelings with some people that thought that we shouldn't be racing. It's like, she's already doing it. She's already driven. She can have an NHRA license. Mm-hmm. If we need to, we'll buy special insurance ourselves. We even offered that. But it turned out it worked out. And what some of the people that we think were our enemies turned out to be some of our best friends.
Yeah, you know, there was just some really notable people racing in it at the time that wrote letters and was like, I feel comfortable with her being on the track. Like companies wrote letters, the big name racers wrote letters that were there. So like, it was really cool. And it's all one of those things that it worked out for the best. Like that was probably best case scenario. It probably jump started and kickstarted everything that I'm doing now. And then it's like Keith Turk is one of our best friends, you know? And so it's funny, all these people that butted heads with, it's like came in, proved ourselves and everything, and then now it's like family.
It opened doors for so many young people. Nobody had done it before that. We didn't think anything about it. We weren't trying to start a movement.
I just wanted to go fast.
She just wanted to race. We didn't think it was anything. But it's family and it's young people, and there's been many, many 16-year-olds come in and do the same thing, and you know, it works.
It was cool.
It was just, you just don't think about 2013 being that backwards, but it really was. I mean,
10 years ago. People know who you are now. Like, how do you start turning that into, like you say, what you're doing now and starting kind of a media company?
That's one of those where it was accidental. So I tell people first, there's that term influencer now. It drives me absolutely nuts. But it is what it is. I was just, Drag Illustrated just nominated me, or made me drag influencer of the year for this year, which is cool because it's Drag Illustrated, so it's actual racers. But my point with all of that is saying that I tell anybody who asks that I am a drag racer first, like drag racing is where my heart's at, and then I'm an influencer second. So just because, meaning that I create content based around what I do, I don't do stuff to create content. So it's very different. And so it was one of those things that 2013 was when 1320 Video was really growing. They were in the drag and drive stuff, and there was all that stuff where social media was really taking off. I didn't do a single thing with it. I was still on Bank Shift posting on the forums, which did nothing, you know? But I didn't care. Like, that's not why I was doing it. But there was people that started following. They just, you know, over time, my account was growing. I didn't think anything of it, but I just post what I was doing, what we were doing, races we were at, the stuff we were building, and it was never intentional. And then it wasn't until, I think, my first year of college, so that would have been 2016 or so, that I wanted to do multiple races that year. Because prior to that, when I was in high school, we were just doing Drag Week. And so that year, I just started YouTube. Just because I was like, we're doing some really fun stuff. Like, this would be cool to share, you know? And I remember they said that, you know, if you want to do all these races, you're going to have to find a way to, like, help pay for it kind of thing. And so I wanted to go to the Dodge Motor Trend Roadkill Nights. And I had no idea what I was doing. We'd had some sponsors, like product sponsors and stuff before that, some really great companies. But I reached out to Phil Smith from Flowmaster and was like, hey, gave him a whole proposal. I had no idea what I was proposing, but I was like, you know, if you guys will help me get to Roadkill Nights for $1,000, I'll do 10 million things. You know, I was like, I'll give you this many videos and this many pictures. And it was the easiest thing I'd ever, like, yes. They come back, yes. And I was like, that worked out different than I expected, you know, because $1,000 was a lot of money. And so I was living, like, I was paying, my college was paid for, but I was living on basically what I was doing with college. And so that $1,000, like, that really kicked it off. I was like, wait, so people are interested. So I was like, well, okay, well, now I have to do videos. And so that's where the light bulb clicked, that I was like, okay, if I do this, I can make it a business. And I'm in school, I went to school for marketing, and I love the business side of stuff. And so I was like, if I do this, then I can go race more. So then if we keep, so I still suck at social media, kind of. I just share what we're doing. But that's where it kind of started, was like in that moment, I was like, okay, this allows me to do this. And that's where it kind of took off. Yeah.
And I don't even remember the Flowmaster thing. That's all new to me.
Yeah, that's where.
It's been too long ago.
It's been too many things happen in between there.
Yep.
Yeah.
But people did pay attention. And I think it was because a girl and teenage, and, you know, she's mm-hmm. built her own car. So we didn't think anything about it. It was never, ever intentional. It was literally just to get her a car that she really liked, that Camaro. And it just snowballed. And we never did. I mean, it's just only recently have you, I think, you've only been on Hot Rod Garage for a little over a year now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really within the last year or so became her business, you know?
I've had this social, like, all I did, so I started Alex Taylor Racing in 2018, and that just had some sponsors, you know, that I worked with on the side a little bit, but it's been one of those that, like, it's grown a lot in probably the last 2 years, because we started building the 55 that I race now in 2021, and so that was like, which we can get into that later, but that was such a major undertaking project-wise. So I was like, this has to be a business. Like, he's not working. This is my full time right now. So, like, 2020 COVID was probably one of the best things that could happen for me, because as far as timeline, like, I saw so many things crumble, like opportunities I had. So it was kind of disappointing. But then, like, in the long run, it bought me a year of time, because I graduated in May of 2020. And I told myself, I was like, I'm going to graduate. And if this car thing doesn't work out in like 6 months to a year, I'll go to law school, you know, which didn't want to do that. But anyway, so like, it bought me time. And then 2021, doing the 55 really kicked stuff off. And that's where it's turned more of a business.
Yeah, since the 55, that's when our life got complicated.
True.
Fast and complicated.
It did.
And I want to talk about the 55. So had you kind of outgrown the Camaro, like you'd sort of reached the end of what you could do with a small tire Camaro? Like, was that sort of the impetus for the 55?
He was racing his Nova. So his first car, the 72 Nova, which you can tell about that because that leads into all of this.
Well, I pulled that car out of storage. It hadn't been licensed. I had it in storage since 1982. So it sat in storage till 2014, I think. I pulled it, decided to do something similar to what she was doing, except I'm not an LS guy. I'm a big block guy. So I put it together with that. And, you know, it turned into, by the time I got finished with it, it was like a 760s.
760s,
but, you know, 183 miles an hour type car. She was actually, backing up, thinking about it, you were actually kind of bored with the Camaro because for a couple, 3 years, the Camaro was fun because she had to work. She kept working to get it faster and faster and faster. There wasn't a lot of 850 cars. Now the Super Street class is considered an 850 class. So now it's who can get closest to 8500.
Like index racing.
Yeah, but so. up until that time, it was, you know, nobody's running 850s. Oh, so-and-so just ran an 870. Man, these cars are getting fast. Well, all of a sudden, they're like, think Tom Bailey said, that 850 cars are like wood falling off the back of a truck.
Yeah.
There's just a ton of them. And he's kept teasing her, you're not fast. And she's like, I'm fast. I'm going fast.
I wanted to be like one of the fast guys, you know, like the guys that were really fast. And so he was racing the Nova and I was racing the Camaro. And we finally kind of had the cars dialed into what they were. They were at their limit for what they were at the time because they're both heavy cars. Both good street, like true street
real
cars.
Real street cars.
And so I was tired of running the 850 class. Like, it just wasn't exciting to me because I hated having to slow down. Like, I love speed. And so the fact of, okay, we could go faster, but we're slowing down, that makes no sense to me, you know? Like, this is pointless. So it only had an 850 cage in it. We'd been a little bit faster, obviously not in competition. And so we had started planning in the beginning of 2021, like the January. Okay, well, if we do a hoop and we do this, okay, we could get the Camaro to like a 750. We could go out and run sevens with it. And so we kind of had that plan. I'd already talked to the partners I was working with that year, thought we had it all lined out. We were both still going to race that year. And he called me one day. I was at home. And he called me and he was like, oh, okay, I have an idea, but it's only going to work if you're into it. Come to the shop. So he starts telling me, he's like, why don't we pull, we had this ratty 55 Chevy that was sitting in the back of the shop that was basically junk. He's like, why don't we pull that up? We'll build a cage really quick. We'll build a full chassis, 650 car, sir, you know, we'll pull everything out of the Nova in it, including brakes, like I'm talking everything. And we'll just make this car that's just a piece of junk, but we'll go race it for a year, run sixes, and then let it sit outside to rust.
No, we didn't care.
It was only there for a purpose of going fast. We were going to build a nice car later. Mm-hmm. Totally changed the plan.
Well, see, that was the plan. I was going to even go as far as putting a Mustang 2 front end on it because I can build those things no problem. But it's like, so that was the plan. I wasn't even going to paint the cage or anything. It was just going to beat the dents out of it. And it's the most snowball thing that I've ever done in my life. She got a couple companies interested in it, mentioned it to them. You know, could we get, instead of taking all the Holley stuff out of your car, I'll just ask Holley. Well, Holley says, yeah, whatever you need. And it's like, oh, that was easy.
But it wasn't. So, like, that sounds easy. But it's one of those things that's where the whole business side of it really, like.
It's easy for me.
It really clicked. Yeah, he was like, we need these parts. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be a lot, you know, proposal after proposal. And I'd written some proposals prior to that. But this is where, like, the business side really kicked off because the car was not, it was supposed to, we were going to rob everything from the Nova. But I didn't like that idea. You know, like, it sucked. I have to pull it apart. And so it was one of those that I was like, okay, if I do this right, I think we can build a car here, you know. So I'm, like, working out the numbers. I'm like, okay, if I post on YouTube, I can make X amount of dollars, which would help cover these expenses and this. Then I'm like, okay, if I reach out to this company, maybe I could pull this. So companies like I Did It and things like that, like I wrote out proposals all day long. And so it was a weird time because it sucked because Dad was actually out doing a lot of physical work and I was in the office all day long, like dealing with partners and companies. And that's something that people didn't realize. Like, there was a lot behind that, behind the scenes, because that was a lot of work. You know, it was a major undertaking.
It was big.
And long story short, this all happened in a matter of 4 months. The build, the proposals, the companies, the projects, everything like that was a 4 month, the deliverables. And so I wrote out a race schedule, did this. And I mean, it was a massive undertaking. And it's amazing how many companies, like, they did jump on board and it made it possible. But it became an independent car, but we did still have to take the engine and transmission out of his car.
Well, the car snowballed. It became not a piece of junk. It's like one day I've got this temporary jig set up because the table, my chassis table, was occupied. And we build this temporary jig, and I shove these old 16 by 16 weld wheels and slicks up under the car on this jig. And, you know, by now I fixed the body, replaced the rocker panels and what have you.
Yeah,
it looked kind of like a car. It looks like it looks now, but, you know, it's just a body on a jig. But as soon as I shoved that tire in there, she's like, I like this. And before, I mean, a week or two later, it's like, this is my favorite car. I love this.
Is.
I said, it's a piece of junk. And she's like, I love it. It's like, can a girl really love patina, rust, dents, and what have you? But she did. From that moment on, every time she'd look at a car, she'd walk in and says, I love that car.
There's literally so many videos where I'd be talking, like when the car was first on the ground, and I'd see it roll by, and I was like, dang, that car looks good. And I'm like, anyways, back to what we were saying. Like, it was so right. It was like the details and the way it was done. And it was really fun because we did all the work. It was like mine and dad's first car where it was like we thought of it from start to finish and then like we executed it. So it was like the majority of the build happened in 4 months. That's not even fair because the first month he was still doing customer stuff and we'd work on it at night and on the weekends.
Yeah.
And so we did all of the chassis and everything. And
built the molds for the fiberglass front end doors, bumpers, trunk lid. We did all that, and then laid up carbon fiber on that. You and your mom laid all that up.
We did,
Mom that was all included in that time frame.
Yeah, mom and I were. He was doing something. You know, he'd be down the back doing something. Mom and I are doing laying up a front end using carbon fiber, and you know, doors that were carbon fiber and fiberglass. And so, like, there was so much. It's really crazy that it all actually worked out because, you know, in addition to just the work, it's now I'm dealing with partners over here. And it was crazy. But anyways, car snowballed, became literally maybe my favorite car ever for personal stuff. And it's like, okay, if anything ever happened to the car, you know, it would be devastating, which is so funny because at first I was like, if something happens to it, it's okay. Like,
yes, patina. We don't care if it gets scratched or dented or whatever. If she puts it in the wall, who cares? We'll beat it out and go on.
You know,
but now it's like, ooh, there's a new scratch on that.
I'm like, poor thing. So anyways, it's really funny because that car really kickstarted it. And it's where we got to kind of, like, he got to have his brand of Hot Rods by Dennis Taylor. And I had Alex Taylor Racing. And they were independent. And that's the first time, like, we really had some really good separation. But they were joining forces. And it was just, it really kind of shaped the direction of, like, pretty much everything that we do now. Mm-hmm. And it kind of changed a lot of paths. And it was really just cool because we worked good together. And so to see our vision that we both had come to life was really neat. So it's cool.
And as far as the actual nuts and bolts of it, like, I think people wonder, like, how is it possible for a, you know, 7, 6, 5 second car to do actual drive on the street and then turn the number? Like, what did you have to do to make it so that it would do both things?
We talk about it quite a lot because the drag and drive thing is, to me, what separates the men from the boys. It's one thing to build a 6 second, which we're just now really in the sixes, second race car, but you can do it a lot easier than what we have to go through. We have to build that 6 second car to drive, run on pump gas, race on methanol.
Yeah.
You know, headlight, everything's functional on the car. It's got to have enough suspension that we don't tear the bottom out of it.
Pull a trailer.
It adds up in weight. So, you know, the car's 3250 or something now.
Yeah,
or we
heavy.
Were used to 4,000 pound cars. So to us, 3250 is a lightweight car. But, you know, most race cars are 2,600 pounds.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot. We've got dual fuel systems. We got 25 gallon tank in the back for street gas with its own pumps, its own hoses going up to the engine and the regulators, what have you. We run on the same fuel injectors, but we switch. We have a methanol tank that's mounted on top and in behind the radiator. So everything's dual, you know, and you've got issues like we didn't want to drive on 16 volts. We never wanted a 16 volt battery. You're charging 18 volts. So you got issues like that. So we're trying to race on 12 volts, and we did. Until just recently, we finally moved to a 14 volt system, and we kind of compromised with both of them. But there's so much to learn about that. You know, you have to build the car where if you do have problems, you don't have a lift. You have to make things almost with a zipper.
It's like thinking of it, I try to say it in like, it's the trophy truck of drag racing. You know, it's the endurance that's combined
that's
with it.
That's what gets you. It's the... Yeah, anybody can go race for a day, or anybody can make a car to drive. But when you combine the two of them, it makes it really hard on a race car. But we've got a lot of miles on that car. We've got 7,000 miles on it now, I think.
Yeah, and people think it rides awful. They're like, that's got to be miserable. But I'll be cruising and about to fall asleep because it's putting me to sleep, and he's asleep in the passenger seat. Like, it's an incredible, it really is an incredible car.
It's so smooth. I mean, people they'll come up to us at track and say, it's got to be rough. It's like, you don't understand, that car is so smooth. Yeah. It's so pleasant to drive. The only thing that it's not is it's loud. So we wear headphones to talk to each other.
But it's nice. Cause
it's cool.
She can listen to music.
She can do Bluetooth music and Bluetooth cell phone.
So,
and
we love it. It's so much fun. Like, we'll cruise down the road with our trailer on the back of the car, 80 miles an hour, and we have this game. We're like, there's a target. There's another one. Past them.
Our targets are other drag week people.
Yeah.
It's like we're passing them all. Yeah.
And so it makes it fun because we'll cruise, you know, 80 miles an hour, listening to music, sipping on our Coke. We got cup holders and everything, you know. So it's actually a lot of fun. But it's one of those, even that's like the major build happened in 4 months, but there's been a lot. It's been a refinement. You know, all of last year was refining it. And this year is the first year that I think it's really going to be competitive. So
you had kind of an epic quest to get it into the sixes. What was it that was, it's hard to say holding it back when you're talking about a low 7 second car.
That's a great question. Cause it's like one day.
Yeah.
It works.
Do we have an answer for
it? You know,
I don't think we do.
And that's the weird part. Cause it was like when we set it out for Quest for the Sixes, that's what the car was built for. And it's one of those things that, like, we took it out, and our first pass was an 850, you know, off the trailer, which by now that sounds slow. But at the time, we're like, off the trailer, first time down the track, and we know nothing about it. It's an 850. So it seemed impressive. And then it was, like, breaking in the sevens was almost impossible. We tested all, like, we had the track for a couple days, a day and a half. And finally, on the last pass, we broke the sevens. And it's like, looking back, I don't know what held us back. I don't know. And then getting in the sixes, it's
well, we ran 7.0 at over 200 miles an hour, pass after pass after pass. And I think what really kicked it, that extra 10th, put it in the sixes, was we went to Ben Strader. We went to EFI school, which we've been to Holly, and she tuned a long time. But she kind of took a backseat to the tuning. And when we finally decided to go back to tuning our own stuff, we went to school with Ben Strader, and it made a big difference.
That's very fair, because it was weird because I started out so hands-on with like the tuning and the EFI side, and then I got away from it, especially in 2021 when we were doing the 55, because I'd never done anything with methanol, so I was a little bit hesitant because I didn't know the air fuel numbers and stuff, like what normal was. And so we were just doing it so quick that I was hesitant. I didn't have time to learn it and research, and I was scared to death I was going to hurt it, you know, and we had so much we needed to do with it. And so, like, I started I kind of stepped back and was like, okay, I'm going to let people that know more than me do this. And it kind of put us in a bad spot over the next, you know, they helped us go faster, but it was one of those things that all of a sudden I didn't know what changes were being made, and I didn't know, you know, I wasn't as hands-on, and it was awful, you know. And then I started learning so much more, or hearing so much more, and it's like everybody has an opinion. And so it's like I got to the point where it's just almost was like freeze. We just froze because I was like, I don't know what to do in this situation. You know, somebody's touching stuff here, so stuff is happening there. And so finally we kind of limped through last year. We had so many issues, not just with the tune, but we're having transmission issues, just so much. It's like if we can just get through this year, we're going to have to reset for next year. So we went to Ben Strader's EFI University. And the thing that helped me the most was I unlearned so much of stuff that I'd been taught wrong. And so it's like all this stuff he told me, I'm like, so you're telling me what we knew in 2013 was right, but I've learned so much just jumbled up mess in between that like it just melted my brain. And so it was really cool when we were testing this year in February. It's my first time out since we'd been to the class. And I was listening to people would come up and give opinions, and like they'd walk away and I'm like, Dad, they're not right. like what they just told me may make sense in their head. And I'd whip open Ben's book and I'm like, but right here, science says that's wrong. You know,
it's numbers, it's math.
it's the math of it. And so like, I think that really helped. It just helped us get more connected with the car and the program again.
And then now it's just, it's sixes like that every pass, mm-hmm. 200 every pass. I mean, 209.
209 in a shoebox. Yeah. Like, it's crazy.
People come up to us, and when we first introduced that build, they're like, why are you doing a 55 Chevy? That's really dumb. Why wouldn't you do a third-gen Camaro or something? So much slippier. Because it's not a 55 Chevy.
It's cool.
You know, is there really any substitute?
No.
I don't care if it slows down a tenth or 5 miles an hour. It's a 55 Chevy. You got to understand. So now we're doing 209. The car will probably do 215 before it's over.
Yeah. That's what's kind of fun because, like, we started talking about, like, what the next project is. You know, not just project-wise, but, like, project for racing. And we go back and forth. And it's, like, finding something that's as appealing as a 55 Chevy that's capable of doing what we want to do. It's, like, there's going to be a sacrifice somewhere, you know, like, be it a little bit slower, things like that. And so that's a constant conversation of like, what's next? And so it's something that's like, the 55 will go compete this year. It's going to be really fun. I think we're finally like, we've learned so much with it, and it'll be time for something new coming up soon. So it's fun though.
So we have to talk about Hot Rod Garage, right? I mean, how did that happen?
Accidentally. There's a lot of stuff here that's very accidental. So going back to the 50, I have to include all this because it was funny how this all happened. So going into this year, I was kind of like, what do we do to compete with the 55 from, or I mean, sorry, going into 2022, I was like, what do we do to compete with what we did in 2021 with the 55? So I'm like, okay, I guess we go race for a season. So we go out. We did Sick Week, which was in February, and then we went to Florida and tested in March and then raced in Bradenton. And Patrick Miller, who is part of Bumblebee Racing, came down, and actually I got to back up one step, I'm sorry. So after we raced Sick Week, I got a call from Motor Trend, producer, and it was like, hey, do you have time to set up a quick Zoom call? And I'm like, yeah, but I'd been in conversation with him before, and I was like, this is going to be a waste of an hour. You know, like, there's no way this is going anywhere. So I go do this Zoom call, and he's like, hey, what do you do? And I'm like, okay. So I'm, like, telling him my story, and he's like, okay. Well, I just wanted, you know, I'm just a talent scout. I just wanted to get a talk to you and get a feel for it. And I told Dad, I literally walked to the back of the shop, and I was like, that was a waste, you know. And so then, like, a couple weeks later, I get a call from, it's Mikey, and he actually is a very important person at the show, but he played himself down really well. And so then he calls me, he's like, hey, so just so you know, we are actually doing something that wasn't a fake, like, that was not just this generic call as it sounded like. Tony Angelo from Hot Rod Garage is leaving. It's not announced yet. You know, he's doing a different project. We're currently scouting for a new host for Motor Trend's Hot Rod Garage. And I was like,
I'm like,
Dad's like, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, you know? And so he's like, do you want to come out and do a screen test? So I'm like, okay. And I'm still like, there's no way, you know, it's not the right time. Like, there's no way they're ready for like me to replace on an iconic show like that. You know, like, it's not going to work. Go out. I do my screen test. Lucky's sitting up there, literally like feet up on the rail watching me. And they're like, okay. Tell us a little bit. You're going to take the head off of this LS engine and talk to us while you're doing it. That's all I got. And I was like, okay, this isn't weird or anything. So I'm sitting there working. I'm like, okay, now I'm doing this, you know? And then that's pretty much the wrap of it. Lucky and I did a couple fake lines back and forth. And they're like, okay, we'll be in touch. And I'm like, I called Dad. And I'm like, man, I kind of really like this, you know? Like, that was weird, but I enjoyed it. And he's like, don't get your hopes up, you know?
That's good dad advice, I feel like.
Well, I mean, it's like, this is not going to happen. There was, what, six or seven other people that were testing?
Yeah, there's a lot of other people screen testing.
What's the chances, you know? So I didn't want her to get too excited about it.
And so, like, we kind of blow this off. We go back to racing. And I, you know, I'm kind of, like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, people would ask. I'm like, I don't know. You know, I may have something coming up, but probably not, you know? And so that's where the Bumblebee thing comes in, because this was a really big weekend, and that's why I bring this up. So we were testing in Florida. We raced there. We did an NMCA shootout, and Patrick Miller was down helping us do a little bit of testing. And I didn't really know Patrick. He's my age. He's like 25, somewhere in that area. So young kid. And him and his friend Alex also came down. And then at the end of this week, it didn't go exactly how we planned. And then he was like, do you want to drive a Pro Mod? I was like, yeah? Is that a trick question? Like, where are we going with this? And he's like, me and my dad, they have two cars. They have a blower car and a turbo bump like car, so Pro Mod type Camaros. And he's like, we're going the lights out. There was supposed to be somebody else coming to drive. They can't make it. The car's already going. Do you want to come? It's this weekend. And I'm like, I tell him, and he's like, yeah, but it's this is like, you know, this crazy deal. So we go up to his house, and I'm like, take my suit with me because we had to leave from Florida.
Yeah, she sent it with Patrick.
Yeah, I sent my suit with him because I'm like, if I think about this too long, like this is a 370s, 200 plus in the eighth mile car. I just done 200 for the first time in the quarter. I'm like, take my suit because I don't want to think about this and back out of it. And so we go up there. We're sitting in his garage as we're prepping this car for the race that weekend. And I get a call from Mikey from the show. And he's like, do you have time for a FaceTime? I'm like, yeah. Interesting. So I was like, hey, guys, I'll be back to doing Pro Mod stuff in a second, but I'm going to go do this call with TV
Motor
for a
Trend.
Second.
It's like, what's happening here?
And so, like, there's all this big stuff happening. And I do this FaceTime, and they're like, do you like us? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, well, we like you. I'm like, cool. They're like, do you want to be a part of Hot Rod Garage? Yeah, I do. And so that's literally just about how it went. They're like, we really like you. We'd like you to come out. We want to do this. And so this is in late March. And so then we go race Pro Mod for a weekend. Cool situation, you know. A couple weeks pass, and like finally the contract comes from Motor Trend. And this is all happening so fast. I am sending my contract to my lawyer. We're on our way to a Pro Mod race again in Alabama. And I packed my bags because I was like, I may be going to Motor Trend after this week, or maybe the contract's not going to go through. I don't know. So we went down there. I didn't know what I was doing, and go run some killer numbers in that. And then finally, they were agreeing to the contract as I was about to get on the plane. No contract signed, hopped on the plane, flew to LA, and shot my first episode of Hot Rod Garage. It was the weirdest month, I think, ever.
Coolest by the same token. I mean, I'm sitting there going, this is real. All this that we've done, just because we wanted to do it, has led up to this moment. I mean, she's going to work on a TV show, Hot Rod Garage, no doubt. It's Hot Rod Magazine, so it's like, you're really becoming somebody.
And
I'm proud a little bit proud.
And it was just really cool because, like, Hot Rod's so important, you know, because
yeah,
that just goes.
Yeah, part of our life.
Yeah, like, that was where it all started. So it was, like, so cool to be running a Pro Mod and going to race Hot Rod, or go to Hot Rod Garage. And, like, there were so many things that clicked, like, all at once that, like, April of last year, it's pretty hard to beat.
Yeah, hard act to follow.
That was a cool month. So, yeah, it was random to answer the question.
So you've driven a Pro Mod. I mean, do you have aspirations to, like, drive a fuel car or, like, anything like that?
Yeah, always. So that's the funny thing. Everybody's like, what's next? And I'm like, I don't know. He used to say, he still does, I like waking up and not knowing what tomorrow holds. Like, I don't set my goals.
We don't
like,
plan anything.
I don't want to, because I tell people that I'm like, if I said that I wanted to drive a Pro Mod, like, that was my ultimate end goal, I would have never drove a Pro Mod last year. It only worked out because we went to do an NMCA shootout, which led to a connection here, which led to that, which led me to a Pro Mod. So, like, I feel like if you get too blinder focused, you miss so many opportunities out there. So, like, I'm like, yeah, I'd like to drive a fuel car, but I'd also like to drive a Pro Mod again. Like, I just really like driving, and he likes building, and we like creating, and it's this perfect storm.
So the way this happens sometimes, the way this storm brews, is like last night, sitting at dinner here, you know, in Nebraska, and I say, you know what? I kind of like to build a Pro Mod. Would you want to race a Pro Mod? A real Pro Mod.
Yeah.
That was a radial tire car.
Yeah,
Pro Mod
with
radial tires.
Yeah.
But it's like, there's so much happening in the Pro Mod world. It's like, maybe we should focus on that instead of drive and drag. She goes, I'm in. Let's do it. So we haven't talked any further about that, but no telling what next year at this time we'll have.
That's usually how a lot of conversations happen, because, like, he's got the creatives. Like, he's the, you know, where a lot of the ideas start, and then I like to step in and do a lot of the business side. So it's like, he's got the idea, And then I'm like, that sounds cool. And then we start creating and spitballing. Like, we'll be driving down the road in the 55. And it's like, what car do we want to do next, you know? And we just did this, like, 2 weeks ago. And it's like, okay. And, you know, so we start spitballing. But then he'll take it. And then I'm like, how do we physically make it happen? You know, like, how do we do the funding? How do we do this? And it's just, that's where, like, it works really good because we both have the different skill sets. And so it's
And we have good. A wife, mother that makes all that happen. She's the one who sits at the computer and books everything and orders parts. We got a really awesome in-house team.
It works out good. Like, she does everything that we suck at, which is planning, booking, scheduling, and she enjoys it. We don't. And so it works out really well.
It's called teamwork.
And then my sister, actually, she started working for me last May when she graduated. She graduated from college with graphic design degree. And so now it's just like, it's just the whole Taylor
family's
clan involved. Rolls along, and it works out pretty good. So she does all the photography and everything, like, on that
editing,
side.
Editing, social media. We just don't have to. She's in an airplane more than she's in a car anymore. So
yep.
Meg took a lot of pressure off of her doing the social media stuff that she doesn't have time to do. Yep. So the whole family's involved now.
Do you guys ever, like, have that conversation and stop and talk about how lucky you are that you, like, get to do what you love with your family? And
So what was it yesterday? Sitting in Ed's car back here, I said, you need to stop and realize how important this is. And we stay grounded because we are so grateful and we understand how fortunate we are to get to do the things that we do. So never, ever will any of us not take that moment to...
It's actually a constant conversation that some people would probably get tired of hearing, but, like, we talk about it all the time. When I say, like, we wake up and talk about cars and go to dinner and talk about cars and then race and talk about new cars and stuff, like, cars are legitimately everything that we do, which sounds very...
Every vacation, every trip.
Yeah, it sounds very like, wow, you're a one-trick pony, but it's not. It's just, like, we love doing all kinds of different stuff with it, and it works out because we all have different specialties. But it's one of those things, like, we'll be, say, on sick week, as we've got 300 miles of open road ahead of us, it's like, man, we're pretty dang lucky. Like, we got some cool friends, some cool family. Like, we just ran this. Like, it's a con. Like, we are always talking about, like, wow, can you believe we're getting to do this?
We have lots of, I guess, fans is maybe the right word, but lots of people, friends on social media that constantly remind us how lucky we are, which brings it all back into reality for us, because it's like she said, it's our life. We don't really think about it, but we do realize how fortunate we are. But people live vicariously through us because we're living, our favorite movie is Tulane Blacktop. We live Tulane Blacktop every time we go out in that car.
Yeah.
And even Richard Ruth, you know who Richard Ruth is, calls me the other day. I've never talked to the man before. I'm working. Debbie comes up with my phone and it's like, dude, I don't have time to talk. She goes, Richard Ruth. Maybe I do have time to talk. So Richard just starts in. He's thanking me to start with, you know, thank you for doing what you're doing. I'm so impressed, and you're living Tulane Blacktop, and this is so important. And it's like, this is, you know, people are paying attention. That's really wild.
In an actual 55 Chevy. It's not like you're living the lifestyle in the right car.
So we're on race week. This is a short but cool. We're driving along. The very first time we take the car out, we're up in Colorado Mountains, and we're driving along, and we had a film crew that wanted to do a movie on us. That's a whole different story. But they're driving. We're on radios talking to them, and we're like, we need to stop at this little town and have a hamburger or something. So they find this restaurant. Well, we pass this restaurant. I'm like, turn around. And she radios to them, we're going to turn around here. There's this restaurant, and it's got this peak, this iconic, you know, form. Mm-hmm. And I said, pull right there. She pulls in front of it. I get my phone out and I stand back and I'm covered in goosebumps. So the film crew comes back, and which none of this ever turned into anything, but they come back and they're like, what's going on? I said, and well, it's the 55 from Tulane sitting in front of the diner with the arch thing. And I said, look right there. And they're like, boom, everybody busts out in their goosebumps. It's like, holy cow. We're living Tulane Blacktop here.
Yeah.
And Dennis Taylor. James Taylor, Dennis Wilson.
Yeah, okay, right.
So it's this is all meant to be. She's the driver, I'm the mechanic. You know?
Why are we sitting here in the Museum of American Speed in front of Iskandarian's Tea?
over the last couple years, something that's really helped with being able to grow and doing what we're doing and, you know, entering kind of a new era of that is really, really great partners and friends and stuff and people that have become family. And Iski is one of those most notable people because Iski is legitimately, Nolan from Iski has become like our family. And so we started with them probably 3 or 4 years ago. It was this very like slow working together. I was like, here's a cam. It's like, awesome, cool, that's awesome, thank you. You know, and then it's like slowly grow partnership. And he does stuff and puts us in his ads. And like this partnership has grown and grown and our relationship has grown. Long story short, SEMA of this last year comes around. Iski is still family owned. Ed Iskandarian, who started it, is still alive, 101 years old, will be 102 in July. It's also the 75th year of Iski cams. So Dad and Nolan are talking at the Iski booth at SEMA, and it's like, what do we do? And I just see them over there scheming, and he can lead this conversation in because that's where this all kind of came to be and why we ended up sitting right here in the spot right now. So
it kind of literally just snowballed like everything else in our life.
Yeah.
But you know, we're talking about doing something for Iski, and we also, so when we came up with this idea, Nolan says it's the 75th anniversary. We should do something.
He just wanted to do a project call.
Yeah, Ed's 100 years old, you know, 101 years old. We need to do something while we can. And it's like, you know what? Also interesting is 75th anniversary of Hot Rod Magazine. Mm-hmm. And he's, oh, that's right. So we start putting this together. Well, here comes
Mike Galimi from Hot Rod.
And we say, hey, Mike, we're scheming. And Mike's like, ooh, we're in. But we still didn't know just exactly what we were going to build. But we, Ed, you know, Nolan says, maybe we could do Ed's recreation of Ed's car and actually make it usable. We can't use that car. It's in a museum and it's worth too much money. And, you know,
it's too iconic.
Take that out?
Yeah, you can't.
So let's build a tribute car to that. And it just, I mean, that's like the pebble rolling down the hill. It just picked up momentum and grew from there. And it's like, let's do this. And we kind of laid a loose plan, but we until this trip here, we really didn't know exactly what the car
was
going
to be. And a lot of stuff like that is stuff where it's like you and your friends sitting around and you have this idea and it goes nowhere, you know? It's like, okay, that's going to die. Cool concept, that's going to die. And it kind of tapered off for a little bit, but Nolan kept like, hey, at PRI, going to start on that tee. And Dad's like, you don't even have a car. Like, we don't have anything. And he's like, yeah, but SEMA 2023, it's going to be there. And so then like, okay, we go back and forth. Well, we end up going to the media trade conference. My sister and me and Nolan, we were in the Iski booth at this industry trade conference deal. And Nolan had my sister put on the flyer that Ed Iskandarian 75th anniversary tribute car is going to be at SEMA 2023. Here you go, media. Run with this story. And Dad's like, I hate you, Nolan. You know, like, we haven't even talked about this. This is January. Well, we end up running into Kelsey from Speedway. And he's
in an elevator.
In an elevator. And we're talking to her. And Ed's like, or not Ed. Nolan says something. He's like, they end up seeing name tags or something. He's like, oh, Kelsey, nice to meet you. We're actually, we're going to be doing a tribute build to Ed's car. It's in the museum. And I'm like, Nolan, like, this is getting out of hand. Like, we really have to do this at that point, you know? And Megan's telling Dad, and Dad's like, we literally don't have time. So anyways, snowballs, literally like this. And Nolan's talking to Kelsey, and this plan is in the works, and Speedway starts to be in the conversation. And then we ended up here this week.
Well, no, there's
a lot more.
A little bit before that, a couple weeks ago, I'm on groups on Facebook, and I had already searched trying to find a car. And, you know, we knew we could do a fiberglass car, but it's like, I really want to do the car justice and do it out of a steel car. It may even be patina, you know, ultimately. But we missed a couple cars. I'd send them to Nolan. He'd go, how much should I offer?
And he'd lowball.
I'm going to offer him $5. Well, of course, the car sold or never, some bad. It's like, dude, you can't do that. It's a T model. They haven't made them in a long time. And that one was absolutely perfect. So, but like everything else that's meant to be, a couple weeks ago, another car comes up, and it's like I send
well,
it to
on,
him.
We're on sick week. Actually, we're racing. He was there with us.
And oh, is that what it was? Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So Nolan says, I'm just going to offer the whole what they ask. And I said, good idea. You know, so he sends them a check and they make arrangements. And exactly. That's what really started
this becomes the car. It becomes real. It is, but it becomes such a, like, this is such a, dad would send Nolan a car. Car would disappear, and dad's like, dude, if you don't get a car, this isn't happening. So that's why when we're at Media Trade Conference and he's like announcing this, I'm like, oh, this is gonna be a lot. Like,
she knew it was gonna be a lot for me.
I did, yeah.
Nolan sees that we built a 55 Chevy to go 6 seconds in 4 months. So we gotta be able to build Ed's car in a couple of days, right?
Me on the internal, I'm like, I'm panicking because I'm like, oh my gosh, like there's a lot that's gotta happen. And so then we're sitting at sick week, or at dinner at sick week, and dad, this is just a couple weeks ago, and dad's like telling me about this car he found, and Nolan's like, yeah, I offered it. See, it's this, it says it's sold. And dad's like, of course it is.
He did.
And he like pulls this joke, he's like, just kidding. He says some jerk bought it. It's me. And I was like, nice. And so that's where it became real. The car will deliver to the shop in a few days. We're up here getting measurements, picking up parts. And that's kind of how it happened. It's really funny, though, because I was like, Nolan, you're promising a lot of people that something's going to show up.
We got to make things start happening. So we come here, and it's like, oh, my God, you know, the heavens have opened up. This is all supposed to be. So the stuff that Speedway's done for us in 2 days, car's coming in 2 days.
Yeah,
it's like, okay, this is real now. This is going
to
work.
Being here, being able to talk to yourself and other people here at Speedway and, like, get measurements and stuff and actually see the car, one, it's exciting, like, opens up excitement for the project or creates it, and two, it's been just, like he's saying, it saves so much time that would have been, you know, wasted in research and stuff. And to be fair, Nolan is like a really good planner, but he just forgets to clue everyone else in on the plan. So he's really good at convincing people. So he probably actually had this plan all along because that's what he does. And then like it all ends up working out how it's supposed to because he does this all the time. So it's probably actually accidentally on purpose.
And only one of us has to do the real work.
That's
guess who that is.
That's not true.
I promise you're going to be a hot rod garage, and I'm going to be building frames.
I have to do a lot of the editing stuff, so it'll be a whole build series. We're going to be documenting the build, and actually trying to give it justice for what an undertaking it's going to be.
You know, no pressure. It's
only a couple.
It's all going to work out. I work best under pressure.
But it's going to be really cool. It really is. It's going to be a really neat project. It's going to be a fun tribute that takes Ed's craftsmanship and really highlights the craftsmanship, and it picks up what he could do with modern technology. Because the car was built in 38 when he was 17. So it's taking today's technology. And one of the coolest things is we're sitting here and we're like, man, why did he do that? And so many cars that are in the museum that you might want to ask that, the person that created those is no longer here. But we legitimately have a list of questions that we're going to go back and ask Ed, who's 101. And we actually get to ask those questions while he's still here to ask those questions. So that's really cool.
And the plan is I get to drive the new car with Ed Iskandarian riding co-pilot, take him through the parade, go to El Mirage with him, you know, take him on.
It's really
at
cool.
My age, how much more time do I have with people of that generation? Those people are leaving us fast. So, you know, this is really, really special to me. It's more than a job. This is like the icing on the cake for me.
Yeah, so it's gonna be a hectic couple months, but it's gonna be cool.
And I suppose we have to ask, where, if people want to watch this come together, where should they be watching that?
So if you guys want to watch it come together, my YouTube channel is Riding with Alex Taylor. So there's gonna be content on there. There's going to be content on the ISKI YouTube channel, so ISKI Cams, ISKI Racing Cams, and then Instagram. Do you know yours, or do I need to tell it?
Dennis Taylor 522.
I type it out all the time. He's like, what's my Instagram?
It's like knowing your own phone number. I don't know. I couldn't tell
you. He'll be posting lots of how-to stuff. Alex Taylor Racing here. ISKI Cams over there. There's going to be so many channels that'll have different content from this. So it's going to be a lot, but it's going to be an entertaining build, I think. Because it's not just functionality. It's recreating something that's really nice craftsmanship.
I could start in and build a T model like I would, you know. You're going to do that on Hot Rod Garage. It's a open slate, you know. You have no rules. we have rules to follow here.
There are some rules.
But they're pretty good rules, right? It's not like you're starting with something ugly and trying to make it cool.
No, it's already cool, yeah. I'll probably make it ugly.
Doing cool justice, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. I'm kind of a punk, though. I don't follow rules real well. But it's like, you know, I don't want to dig my torch out and weld with a torch. So I've got to make things look like Ed did, and he did a fantastic job. It's unbelievable. But, you know, I'm thinking this morning, I wake up thinking, how am I going to recreate this body line? Well, I'm going to have a TIG. I'm going to be TIGing this, but I can't make it look like a TIG. I got to disguise this.
Yeah.
We might get a little too perfect in what we do, and we're not, don't get me wrong, but, you know, a stack of dimes, that car's not got a stack of dimes, but for arc welds and gas welds, it's got some really impressive welds.
By a 17-year-old kid in a driveway, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, think about all of that. The time, 1938, 17 years old, two-car garage. I've been there. I know. I did it in a two-car garage in California at 17-year-old, but it didn't look like that. You know, that's really impressive.
Thanks to Dennis and Alex for joining us, and thanks to all of you for listening to What Moves You, a Speedway Motors podcast. For more on what Dennis and Alex are up to, be sure to check out the Speedway Motors toolbox at speedwaymotors.com. There's also going to be a lot more on this T Roadster build on Alex's YouTube channel, Riding with Alex Taylor. What Moves You is available wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.